Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call, did write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of America's richest hemorrhoid to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is denying the antecedent, also known as the inverse fallacy.
Yeah.
Richest hemorrhoid is very... it's some sort of diamond studded... thing going on in my mind.
Yeah, I can't take credit for that. That's it's a John Oliver original.
Ah, right.
But it's when I heard it, I was like, yeah, no, that's good.
Perfect.
That's a good one. Yeah. So, yes, denying the antecedent. This is a formal fallacy, which is we don't do many of because they are less common in general discourse because they're kind of automatically, by the form of the argument, invalid reasoning. Whereas the informal fallacies that we usually talk about are invalid because of the context of the argument.
Yeah.
And so they're much more common.
Yeah.
And
so
denying the antecedent is the argument that takes the form if P, then Q, not P, therefore not Q. So you might say something like, if I'm a bird, then I have two legs.
Yeah.
I'm not a bird.
Right.
Therefore, I don't have two legs.
Right. So it's saying that the if statement, if P then Q, is actually so rock solid that the negative of it would also obtain. So the
antecedent there is P, if I'm a bird. The next bit, if I'm a bird, then I have two legs. That's the consequent.
Yeah.
So if you deny the consequent, so if I'm a bird, I have two legs, I don't have two legs, therefore I'm not a bird. That is valid logic.
Right.
Denying the consequent. Denying the antecedent, saying I'm not a bird, therefore I don't have two legs, where it falls down. Because obviously there are lots of other things that have two legs.
Including you, who's clearly
including
not a
bird. Yeah. It's probably best if we use some real world examples to explain this. And the reason that I chose to do this one is because of the court case involving our former president, where he claimed to be immune from stuff.
Yeah.
And in his argument, essentially, his lawyers made the case that the impeachment judgment clause says that if a president is impeached and convicted in that impeachment, then they can go on to be prosecuted in court.
Right.
And they said that that means if he isn't impeached and convicted in that impeachment, then he can't be prosecuted in court.
Ah, yes, they're putting a lot of weight on the antecedent in the defence by saying, well, that the logic is so strong if convicted, then prosecuted, that if not convicted must mean not prosecuted.
Yeah, essentially this is the difference between if and if and only if.
Yeah.
If you said at the beginning of those statements, if and only if, then Q, that would be valid logic. And you could then say, well, the antecedent isn't fulfilled. Therefore, we know that the consequent Q is not valid.
Yeah.
So if the impeachment judgment clause said, if and only if the person is impeached and convicted, then they can be prosecuted, that would be reasonable. But it doesn't say that. And both Tanya Chutkan, when this was first argued in front of her, and the appeals court, both pointed out in their judgments that this is denying the antecedent.
Oh, okay.
The appeals court ruling said, the impeachment judgment clause merely states that the party convicted shall nevertheless be subject to criminal prosecution. The text says nothing about non-convicted officials. Former President Trump's reading rests on a logical fallacy, stating that if the president is convicted, he can be prosecuted, does not necessarily mean that if the president is not convicted, he cannot be prosecuted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they cite an example of a Scalia concurrence to a case in 2014 of NLRB versus Noel Canning, where the question there was whether Obama could make recess appointments while Senate wasn't in session, because that's a rule in something you're allowed to do, and it is always used generally to be when there is an appointment which needs to be made, but it's that Senate has broken up and hasn't resumed the next session yet.
Yeah.
And there was a point at which Obama used the moment between two sessions in January, where it was the end of one session of Senate and the beginning of the next session. And it was kind of the stroke of the gavel was the point at which there was kind of a break. And he claimed that he'd, during that millisecond, I made a couple of government appointments that would have otherwise needed Senate approval, but I did them in the recess. The question was basically whether they were in recess between the two sessions of Senate, essentially, while they were switching from one session to the next session of Senate. And the Judiciary Committee argued that it's not a recess because the Senate is never absent. They're there in the room the whole time.
Right.
It's just, you're just legislatively changing it from one session to the next.
Yep.
And Scalia made the point that arguing that it's not a recess because the Senate is never absent at that point doesn't mean that if the Senate is absent, it is a recess.
Yes, because it's wonderful stuff, isn't it? So it's because it's properly formal logic.
Yeah.
And I actually took a course in formal logic, and it's basically maths, and it's all full of P's and Q's and the little symbol for not P and not Q. And you have to kind of, it's like balancing chemical formulae where you can work out from just the, you know, how things react and how all the numbers come out, what the product of a chemical reaction would be, or an equation. How do you work out the equation where that, you know, you have to give them a common denominator and you can take that away from that. And it's like that with formal logic.
Yeah, yeah.
Having sat in back-to-back committee meetings where they do the gavel and you know you're not in session, even though you don't leave the room. So you can't make committee decisions because the committee isn't called, even though they're all in the room.
Yeah.
Ooh, excellent. Yeah.
Our second example is a tweet from Donald Trump on May 30th of 2019. The greatest presidential harassment in history. After spending $40 million over two dark years with unlimited access, people, resources, and cooperation, highly conflicted Robert Mueller would have brought charges if he had anything, but there were no charges to bring. So his argument there is if Mueller had charged Trump with a crime, that would be evidence that he'd committed a crime.
Yeah.
But Mueller didn't charge him with a crime. Therefore, there's no evidence he committed any crimes.
Which is not
true at all, because there are other reasons Mueller didn't charge him.
Bring charges, because he wasn't authorised to do so.
Yeah, yeah, the OLC memo didn't allow him to.
He made lots of recommendations that charges ought to be brought because he didn't find evidence that he hadn't committed crimes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, wow. So that's a very convenient use of that.
And on a similar vein, we have Debbie Lesko questioning Mueller in Congress. This was a hearing where they were very focused on the obstruction of justice arguments against Trump.
Right.
And she said this.
There's been a lot of talk today about firing the special counsel and curtailing the investigation. Were you ever fired, Mr. Mueller, from the special... Were you ever fired as special counsel, Mr. Mueller?
No.
So her argument essentially is that if Mueller had been fired, that would have been good evidence that Trump was obstructing justice. But Mueller wasn't fired.
Right.
Therefore, Trump didn't obstruct justice.
Right.
And again, that's not the only way he obstructed justice. That's not the only way he could have obstructed. He obstructed in many other ways.
Yes, that's the other thing. It is... stretching the if to being an if and only if, isn't it? It's stretching it to say this is the only way you can proceed.
Yeah.
But actually, you could have done all of the things that you're accused of by countless other means, which he has. Yeah. And it is good. The lovely footage in that bit, like Mueller and his team are just laughing at her. They're going, "What?"
He kind of toys with doing a little joke when she says, "Were you ever fired?" He starts to say, "Not that I know of." But he's like, "No, this is a serious hearing."
I won't do that. That would get me into trouble because these people are idiots. Yeah. And the fact that she's breaking Trump's teeth in that day for him, I mean, on his behalf, because she can't get Special Counsel Mueller all get chewed up, and then Mr. and Mueller get all squashed together. Yeah. Because he's so excited at the
he's got it. This is gotcha question.
Flawless logic.
This will prove it. And now we can all go home.
Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
It was quite interesting looking for this stuff, because what I normally do is go and watch Prime Minister's Questions.
Just wait for it to happen.
Yeah, this is the kind of access drug for doing it. And it is a cauldron of countless logical fallacies, but it's just getting boring now because Rishi, whatever Starmer says, and Starmer's getting bolder and bolder and wittier and rapier-like each and every time. Whatever he says, Rishi Sunak just says, same old story. He's sniping from the sidelines. He's got no plan. And he goes, whilst we're getting on with delivering, what are you delivering? Profits for previously nationalised companies. So I didn't do that. So what I did was I thought, hang on a minute. I'm sure Thatcher said some dodgy things. And I think I found the one. And the quote is, look at a day when you are supremely satisfied at the end. It's not a day when you lounge around doing nothing. It's when you've had everything to do and you've done it.
Right.
And I think that the denying the antecedent is that actually some of the my counterexample would be some of the most satisfying days I've ever had includes those where I've just lounged around doing nothing.
Yeah. So if you had lots to do and you got it done, you are satisfied. Therefore, if you didn't have anything to do, you can't be satisfied. It's her argument.
Or you had lots to do and you didn't do it.
Yes.
You can't be satisfied. Or you did something other than not doing lots of stuff. You can't be satisfied.
Yeah.
If you lounged around all day doing nothing, then you can't be satisfied.
Which, again, would be fulfilled by changing it to if and only.
Yes.
If and only if you have been busy and successful, you can be satisfied with your day. That would then follow logically.
Yes, but it would still be deniable.
It's not an if and only if. That would be incorrect, but it would be valid logic.
It would be logically valid. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
And you can get to an incorrect conclusion using valid logic.
Yeah.
The point of the formal fallacies is even if you get to the correct conclusion, you have not done it in a logically valid way.
So, yes, you've done it in an invalid way. Yes. Yeah. So, in fact, my kind of bracket note is those days where I've lounged around doing nothing and being supremely satisfying, it's called being on holiday, but not not only on holiday, because that in itself would be denying the antecedent. You can say, you can have those lounging around days when you're on holiday, but you can also have lounging around days when you're not on holiday.
Yeah.
So that's another denial of the answer. So that would have to be if and only if you're on holiday for it to be logically valid.
Yeah.
So, it's very satisfying to find that Margaret Thatcher was an illogical captain. was very useful. So, example number two, this week, today, in fact, George Galloway was sworn in as a new MP for Rochdale in the election I think we covered in the last episode, where we talked about another by-election in Rochdale where the Labour candidate was withdrawn too late to take his name off the ballot paper because he had said some anti-Semitic remarks, and Labour had kind of stood by him when he claimed that Israel had only allowed the 7th October attacks by Hamas as a pretext to invade Gaza, and he said, well, he's apologised for that, so they kind of, all right, and everybody went, wait a minute, you've thrown people out of the party for less, why haven't you done it this time? And then it kind of undenied a bit, but Starmer finally changed his position after the same guy apparently also blamed Jewish media figures for fueling criticism against a pro-Palestinian Labour MP. And then it all got a bit, you can't kind of have a go at another MP. So he got taken off the ballot.
He's having a go at the MPs now.
But they threw him out of the party. He was still on the ballot. George Galloway, who was running for the Workers' Party of Britain, won the election. And after he won, Starmer said this.
Galloway only won because Labour didn't stand a candidate. I regret that we had to withdraw our candidate and apologise to voters in Rochdale. But I took that decision. It was the right decision. And when I say I've changed the Labour Party, I mean it. Obviously, we will put a first-class candidate, a unifier, before the voters in Rochdale at the general election?
I think the denying the antecedent is he only won because Labour didn't stand. So the logic there is if Labour had stood, he wouldn't have won, which actually isn't borne out by what's happened before, because Galloway was elected as an MP in a by-election in Bethnal Green, where he stood for the Respect Party, and he gained the seat from the Labour Party, who stood with a majority of 823 votes. And at that time, he said, Blair, this is for Iraq. And when he won the seat in Rochdale, he said, Starmer, this is for Gaza. So it's about kind of doing that. He also won as a Respect candidate in Bradford West by-election in 2012, defeating the Labour candidate Imran Hussein with a 36% swing, which was amongst the largest in modern British political history. So it isn't true.
Well, it isn't. It could be true, but it isn't logically valid to argue that.
Yes.
If there wasn't a Labour candidate, he won. If not, no Labour candidate. Therefore, if there was a Labour candidate, he would have lost.
Yeah.
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 You can't make that argument necessarily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's, yes, an interesting one. And then only yesterday, former Immigration Minister Robert Jemrick said this.
You cannot resolve this problem, build a more united country, which is what the Prime Minister was calling for, a more cohesive country built around British values, unless you end this era of mass migration. We've been living in a time where up to 1 million people have arrived in our country every year, and it's impossible to successfully integrate so many people.
So basically saying you can't integrate into society at this level of immigration.
Especially if you really, really don't try. If the government has no interest whatsoever in helping that happen, it makes it very difficult.
Yeah. And also, if you look at the government, I mean, it's straight out of Nigel Farage, Oswald Mosley, the language of 1930s Germany playbook. What they're doing is just conjuring an enemy out of thin air, this amorphous blob of them, immigrants, doing that stuff, which is intended to scare everybody else into voting for a party that will do something about it. But if you look at the party, given that he's saying at this level of immigration, and we've been subject to this for 30 years, you know, whether the numbers are correct, I doubt. But at this level of integration, you can't integrate. But if you look around the present cabinet table, and even only the just previous cabinet tables, would show you how successfully children of immigrants can integrate into the country to the point where they hold some of the very highest offices in the land. Rishi Sunak is Prime Minister, Suella Braverman, Priti Patel, James Cleverly, Kemi Badenoch, Sajid Javid, Kwasi Kwarteng, Nadeem Zahawi, Alok Sharma. There are 66 MPs who are from ethnic minorities and 55 ethnic minority members in the House of Lords. The man he is quoting, who stood outside number 10 and made up this stuff about immigrants, is the Prime Minister. He is the son of immigrants that came over in the 60s and the parents of Suella Braverman, Priti Patel, James Cleverly, Kemi Badenoch, Sajid Javid, Kwasi Kwarteng, Nadeem Zahawi, Alok Sharma were all immigrants. Many of them were refugees. Yeah. But of course, what they're saying is, you can't have the level of integration because there's only so much room at the top. We can't let everyone have access to all this richness and income that we enjoy, so we've got to keep you out. James O'Brien was talking about it, and he said it's not so much the pull up the drawbridge afterwards. It's more like, oh, I didn't mean them. I didn't mean you. I meant them. And we said, well, who's them? Well, yeah, we're not Sunak and not these guys. Not all of these people that are successfully integrated, but them over there are just the shadow at the end of the street that cause you sufficient fear. And as the Idols once sang, the best way to scare a Tory is to read and get rich.
So is your argument here that if you have immigration at a high level, then you cannot have integration of those immigrants into British society? Yeah. And if you don't have the immigration at that level, then you can have integration.
Then if you don't have immigration at that level, there would be nobody to integrate because they just wouldn't come in. there would be no need for integration.
That makes it purely the volume, arguably, that
right.
affects integration, whereas actually there's quite a lot of societal pressures, both financial and, you know, governmental and historical, etc., that either improve or reduce the likelihood of integration.
Yeah.
Not to mention, apart from the else, how important integration, whatever that means, is.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, what yes, the exactly. fuck yes. is, like, how
what,
about
what the
just
fuck does it matter?
People are allowed to be who they are, and that is part of Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very, very shaky premise, I think.
Yaz and the Plastic People there with the antecedent denying the only way is up. You can go down sideways.
Yeah, there's other
front and
other
back.
Options.
Yeah.
So in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective. And our first example comes from the excellent film Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And in this scene, the family who is going cross-country to enter their little girl into a beauty pageant has stopped at a diner and they're having some food and she wants to order ice cream.
When you eat ice cream, the fat in the ice cream becomes fat in your body.
Richard, I swear to God.
It's true.
What? What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong.
So if you eat a lot of ice cream, you might become fat, and if you don't, you're going to stay nice and skinny, sweetie.
Yeah. So if you eat ice cream, you'll get fat.
Yeah.
If you don't eat ice cream, you'll stay skinny.
Not fat. Yeah.
Yeah. I can attest to the fact that there are other things you can eat which will make you not skinny. I don't eat a lot of ice cream, and yet, somehow and I have achieved a level of fatness.
If you had eaten ice cream,
some might attribute to ice cream if they saw me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy that eats a lot of ice cream, they might say.
You just have to carry around an empty ice cream cone in order to put them off the scent that you've eaten pizza and drunk lots of beer. No, it's not the pizza beer. It's all ice cream. Yeah, everything else, if I just could cut out the ice cream, I would be fine. I would be slim.
If only it was that easy. I can live without ice cream. I do like ice cream. I'm not going to lie, but I could go without it. That'd be fine if it was that easy. Yeah, but no, there's other stuff. Chocolate and things like that. You can't eat that either.
No. Well, not in the quantities that we eat it, but perhaps. Yeah. Those big bars, those jumbo bars.
I do like a big bar of chocolate.
When it says family pack.
Fuck off.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, no, I go, what, really? No, there's four in my family. I'll have to get four of those. Exactly. And also, if you want to lose weight, what you need to do, like Alan Arkin does, is die. Well, actually, he loses his height because...
We should say the character Alan Arkin plays in the film.
Oh, yeah, he's the grandpa.
This is not just a weird, sick joke about Alan Arkin.
No, it's the character that he plays. Not Alan Arkin dead. Yeah, because, you know, he's a fairly tall guy, you know, he's the substantial guy. He dies in the film and then they ship him home again. But they shove him sideways across the width of a VW camper van.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's a dormobile, isn't it? which are notoriously narrow, and so he's a lot less tall. Don't they snatch him from the morgue?
Scrunch him up. That's famously with dead people.
Yeah. You can just scrunch him up.
Very scrunchable. Yeah. You become after
they
death.
They are, But they can't. They turn into kind of silver foil, don't they?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Once they're scrunched, they just stay there.
Yeah.
And they conduct electricity as well, as Frankenstein will attest.
So our second example is from an episode of Animaniacs, the reboot of Animaniacs, not the original series. And this is actually the part of a Pinky and the Brain segment.
Oh, okay.
Where Brain has created a robot likeness of himself.
Right.
And Pinky asks the Brain robot to tell him a joke.
Yep.
Brain and Tuck walks into a bar. The bartender asks him if he'd like a drink. They Tuck replies, I think not. He then vanishes.
That is rich Cartesian dualism, a ripe source of comedy.
It's a philosopher's gag. Yeah.
So yeah, I think therefore I am. I think not, therefore I am not.
Yes.
Simple as that.
It's not really that isn't the essence of Cartesian dualism. Just to correct the record, because Cartesian dualism maintains that there is a body and a mind. That's the dualism. Whereas monism is the idea that consciousness is a brain function.
The materialism kind of argument, yes.
And that, there is a philosophical publication called The Monist. But I have heard that gag in a philosophical journal. In fact, I've read it in The Monist. Yeah, it was exactly that. So it's good to hear that again.
There you go.
And then I found an example which is even more overt. Isn't it? Which is, so this is from American Dad, and they've been to a firework display at which there was some sort of competitiveness going on, and the dad bought lots of fireworks.
It was awesome, Mom! We blew the other rockets away!
That's great, honey! I just wish your father didn't spend our entire savings on it.
Well, you gotta spend money to make money.
But you didn't make any money.
Then by that logic, I didn't spend any. Good night, everybody!
There you go. So you've got to spend money to make money, and you didn't make any money, therefore I didn't spend any.
Yeah, so if you made money, then you must have spent money. You didn't make money, therefore you didn't spend money. That's the argument, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In order to make money, you've got to have spent some money. I didn't make any money, therefore I didn't spend any money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. That's right. He hastily beats the retreat. Good night, everyone. Yeah.
So before we move on to fake news this week, we need to tell you again about our Oscars pool, because the Oscars are coming up next Sunday, coming Sunday. Yep. And we spent a while last night talking about
work.
The Oscars. It was almost a day at office talking about the Oscars. I will edit down before I release patron bonuses later this week. And so that will give you an opportunity to hear what we think will win the Oscars. But if you have any thoughts on what might win the Oscars, if you want to listen to us and then have a go, fallaciouStrump.com/Oscars is our Oscars pool.
Yep.
It's a competition to see who can predict the most correct Oscar wins. There's no prizes or anything, just bragging rights.
Free to enter.
Yeah, free to enter. And the more people who enter, the better, because for every person who enters, we will donate $5 to When We All Vote, the Get Out the Vote organization. And in fact, that money will be doubled because I will donate it through my work, who have a clever system of matching charitable funds. And also, every year we like to do one of our months of patron money. We donate to charity. And so since it's an election year, we'll be doing that to When We All Vote as well.
Yep.
And we're going to do it with this month, March, so that it actually has some time to have some kind of impact. That money will also be doubled. So if you've been thinking about maybe becoming a patron or increasing your patron money, like one of our favourite patrons, Renee Z, did this month, now's a great time to do it.
So do that. You only do it for the month.
Yeah, even if you only do it for the month, that's fine. And you get access to all of our extra patron bonuses, lots and lots of episodes talking about weird Dinesh D'Souza films or books by Mary Trump or by Bob Woodward. Also, we did a book of his.
We did.
We've done lots of films and books and extra stuff that you can access if you become a patron.
And that too will be doubled.
Absolutely.
Even if you want to do it for just 1 month, you get access to all that free stuff. You can listen to the Oscars, get our considered, a bit long considered opinions.
You can listen to our previous two attempts at predicting the Oscars and see how well we matched up as well.
Yeah.
If you've got plenty of time.
We'll just gloss over that bit. because you say us. Yeah. But yeah, do that.
So that's patreon.com/ftrump to join up, or fallaciouStrump.com/Oscars to join in the Oscar pool.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Well, of course, if we were truthful about the game, then the only reason I'm losing is because the game is rigged. And you might say the game's not rigged, therefore I'm not losing.
Right. Yeah, flawless.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I managed to break your impressive streak of victories last time. Yeah. So I am currently on a streak of one. And hoping to increase that. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a streak or is that more of a dot?
Let's see how we can turn it into a streak or a little smudge that then later becomes a streak.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah,
Trump visited the border this week.
Right.
Coincidentally, on exactly the same day as Biden visited the border.
Right, yeah. Same bit of the border?
They're slightly just up the road because he wouldn't want Biden to have any good press for visiting the border, so he went too. And he gave a speech. I'm not sure if it was after or before that he went to the kind of fence and waved at some migrants trying to get in, just like over the river. And then turned to the cameras and went, "They like Trump, what can I tell you?" And it's just crazy fucking dude. Anyway, he also gave a speech, and these are some of the things he said.
Right.
For a little while, he went on about how he couldn't understand why the Democrats would be so keen on letting so many illegal immigrants into the country, because, you know, that's kind of the Democrats' thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's so on that, yeah.
So here are some things he said about that.
Okay.
Statement number one. Nobody's really been able to tell me how anybody could want it. You know, you always, in business, you always want to understand the other side. You want to figure it out so you can do something that's good or bad, depending on what you're looking for. But nobody can explain to me.
Okay.
Statement number two.
Yeah.
There's nobody explains to me how allowing millions of people from places unknown, from countries unknown, who don't speak languages, we have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages. They're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them.
Right. That's another one. I mean, he's snagged on a word and then he's kind of spiraling around it like a moth around a flame. Yeah. Right.
And statement number three. And I ask people, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy. So if I don't understand something and I just don't understand it, can anybody tell me why they think it's a good thing? And nobody can tell me. But I know. The reality is that it's for votes. They're letting them in for votes. That's the only explanation.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. Number one's a bit tricky because it doesn't say anything. Not that the others do, but that one's kind of empty of any hooks that you might think, oh, yeah, that's definitely him. So I'm a bit suspicious of that. Okay. And also the languages, speaks those languages truly fluently, nobody speaks them. So I'm suddenly not convinced that that's real either now. Okay. Well, I'm a pretty smart guy, so if I don't understand something, .. Yeah. Because then he's not that smart because he can't come up with what. So if I don't understand it, and then he's lost, a loss for what? So he just says, and I just don't. Okay, so that. Letting him for votes, that's the only explanation, which is suspiciously denying the antecedent shaped. Letting him in, that's the only explanation. Okay. All right, so on that basis, all right. Okay, letting him in for votes, the only explanation. Or is it languages? Okay, I'm now very suspicious. I think number two is the one that you made up about the languages, the bouncing ball of languages.
Okay. And of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
I'm more convinced by the unsurprising, fairly mundane one, number one.
Okay. And number one?
Yeah.
Is real.
Nobody's really been able to tell me how anybody could want it. You know, you're always in business. You always want to understand the other side. You want to figure it out so you can do something that's good or bad, depending on what you're looking for. But nobody can explain to me.
What?
Well, you want to know. You want to be able to understand so that you can do something good or bad.
Or bad, depending on what you're looking for. Yeah, goodness or badness. But nobody can explain it to me, so I can't understand that. So I don't understand it.
No.
Because nobody's been able to tell me.
Yeah. Okay. If nobody can explain it to him, maybe it's him.
Yeah. You think? Yeah. Or maybe there isn't a reason like business. It's not about business. It's about providing a service. Yeah.
Yeah.
But apart from the fact, the reason that nobody can explain it to is because he's made it up.
Yes. There's also that.
Oh, yeah. Because it doesn't exist. Nobody can explain to me. Uh-huh. Why? Because it doesn't
why
exist.
Why this thing that isn't real happens.
In my head.
Yeah.
Why can't you explain that to me? Because you made it up, you idiot. Yeah.
You also think that number three is real.
Yeah.
And number three?
I think, yeah.
Is fake news.
Oh, I went for the wrong one.
And the dot becomes a smudge.
No. Yeah, should have. I was drawn in by the foreign languages bouncing ball, and then thought. But then the tell, I think, was the only explanation in an episode about denying the antecedent. That's the only explanation. If not votes, then what? If it's not the reality is they're letting them in, but it's for votes. They're not letting them in for votes. Therefore, it can't be something else.
Yeah.
Man, well done.
Which means that language bouncing ball
it was real.
Was real.
No.
Nobody explained to me how allowing millions of people from places unknown, from countries unknown, who don't speak languages. We have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages. They're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them.
We have people who don't speak languages, and then we have languages
coming
into
our
country.
On their own, not attached to people.
Just wandering in, asking for directions. Nobody can understand them. Yeah. We have nobody that even speaks those languages apart from the people that have come in. Yeah, languages don't appear on their own. Exactly. Wander in, bit of Sanskrit coming across the border. Yeah. Yeah, American Sign Language waving to you. Yeah, uh-huh. Nobody speaks that.
So that was real.
Man, should have gone with it. Yeah. Should have gone with my gut. Well, that was my gut. It was wrong. Yeah. That's because I've filled it up with too much ice cream. There you go. Well done. We have some
social answers.
Oh,
on Facebook.
Yeah.
Andrew says, the focus on languages in two seems too chatbot to me, so I'm going with that one.
I'm with you. I feel your pain. Yeah.
Mary says, number one is so wonderfully vague that it's either cleverly made up or just the usual Trump gubbins. I'm going for it being fake. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Jason says, my guess is number two is real. These are always tough. So didn't go for which was fake.
Yeah, well done. Yeah.
Ben says, I'm going for three is fake. It has so many Trumpisms, it must have been composed by someone pretending to be Trump. Yeah.
There you go.
Strangely, number one doesn't sound like Trump at all.
It's obviously just the warm-up before he's got really revved up.
He's revving up, And Richard said, new Trump unauthorized biography title ideas. Everything you wanted to know about business, language and votes, but were afraid to ask. Okay, I'm going for two. It's just too wacky, so it has to be made up, right? Not always true.
Turns out it was the third one. So many Trumpisms, too good to be true.
On Patreon, Stephen Bickle says, okay, I know it's one or three since I heard Trump talk about languages no one speaks. I'm going to guess one as three is a classic case of projection.
Nick says,
tough. I remember him talking about where did you come from in the Congo and they say prison, so I would expect the languages bit. Yeah, because he did bring Congo up again in this speech.
Oh, did he? Oh my God.
He obviously would remind everyone that he's a smart guy, so I'm going to say number one is fake.
Yeah.
Amber says, I don't want to guess because I'm sure I'll be wrong. On a totally unrelated and hypothetical note, how would the monarchy feel about taking us back, asking for a friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Rene Z says, I think number one is fake news. I doubt his view of business is to understand the other person. And I think you're absolutely right. Yep.
Yeah. Unless you can figure out you could do something bad to them.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're looking for. Yeah.
And Will says, my guess is number one is fake, but I'd really like them all to be fake news. Christ, that man is just unhinged. So, yeah, I think that's pretty good record against the social contestants, I think, this time.
Yeah, yeah, pretty good. Yeah. And it was a good selection. It reminds me of the ones I did of Boris, where the first one was kind of inane and then the others were unhinged.
Yeah.
And you think, and you think, oh, wow, well, definitely that one, the inane one. But yeah, but I went for, I went for the unhinged.
You went for the unhinged one and that was real.
Yeah.
As so often seems to be the case.
Exactly.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Immunity is Not a Logical Fallacy, because the Supreme Court has decided to take up the immunity case. They have granted cert and will be hearing oral arguments the week of April 22nd. What's that? That's almost 2 months from when they took it up. It was the 28th, I think, they took it up in February. So that's quite a long time for briefings to be prepared, given that this case has already been through two courts, essentially. But equally, it's not as long as they could have given. So it's they're calling it an expedited timeline. But realistically,
If it really was.
Realistically, it means that we probably won't get a ruling on it until June, just before the court's term finishes for this year.
Yeah.
This is specifically an appeal of the immunity question that was heard in Tanya Trutkin's court. So it definitely stops that one. The Georgia case, we haven't got a date for anyway, and we're still waiting on McAfee's ruling on whether Fannie Willis is going to be taken off the case.
Yeah.
But when that comes through, I don't know whether this will have an impact on whether they're able to set a date for that case. But what it does mean is that the DC election interference case with Jack Smith's case in Tanya Shukin's court will not be able to go ahead probably until late summer, early fall.
Yeah, which might actually be quite good because that's getting very near the voting window.
Yeah.
And actually, if that's all back in the news again, that might...
I mean, I don't think he's going to be out of the news. Yeah. his court case is going to be out of the news at any point. But if he's actually physically in court during the kind of month or two running up to the actual election, it could have an impact. Ted Lieu said on, I think, Twitter, something to the effect of, if Trump does somehow manage to delay his court cases until after the election on the basis that he's going to get in and then pardon people, what will happen, in his opinion, and I think there's some merit to this, is that there will be a blue wave the likes of which we've never seen, because people want him to be to see the inside of a courtroom. If that case or the Georgia case gets pushed beyond the election, Democrats will come out in force to make sure that he doesn't get out of it by becoming president.
I think that's
not a bad argument. I think it's fair, and I think it's certainly something that if those cases do get pushed beyond the election, it's something the Democrats can campaign very, very heavily on. Is if you want him to see even the argument of justice, if you want there to be a hearing in a court about the stuff that he is accused of, then we have to stop him from getting in.
Yes.
So it might not be the worst thing
Yeah.
that has happened. And one thing I do think is that it doesn't necessarily mean, well, it certainly doesn't mean that the Supreme Court is going to rule that he's immune. It can't be taken right. to say that. What it right. means is that at least four of the justices decided that this was an important or novel enough piece of legislation that it needs to be decided by the Supreme Court. Mm. And that might be that they are just going to rubber stamp the lower court's argument that he is not mm-hmm. immune. It could be that they want to explore his immunity or the how narrow or wide that immunity should be. I think in taking up cert, they have narrowed the question of immunity mm-hmm. specifically to official acts taken while he was president. So even if they rule on that he is immune, that doesn't necessarily cover the obstruction of justice that he committed
all the president. Stuff since yes, because otherwise they've got to also consider the if they do rule that he is immune in all cases, then what's the implications for future presidents
or the current president
to do whatever the fuck they like,
absolutely,
you know, like a king,
yeah.
You know, and then have people put to death and they would be immune from prosecution.
Yeah, very much so. And I really don't think it's going to go in that direction. I don't think they're going
right.
to rule that he has immunity because, yeah, absolutely, that means that Biden can do all kinds of stuff. He can have every Republican senator arrested.
Yeah.
And then the Senate.
Be immune.
Yeah. And then the Senate can't vote to impeach him.
Yeah, fantastic.
There's literally nothing to stop him doing that.
Yeah, yeah. They should do that. Except the Democrats don't do that.
No, they don't do that kind of thing. But it's the danger that could happen in the future means that it would be insane if they say that he's immune.
Yeah.
Also, it only takes four justices to grant cert. It takes five to have a ruling on a thing. And based on the fact that they just yesterday or today actually came back with a ruling on the Colorado 14th Amendment case, and it was a unanimous ruling, that kind of suggests that they are looking at these cases that could be really divisive and thinking, okay, we need to present a united front on them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's absolutely possibility that some of the hardline Republican justices might dissent, but I think it might come back with a unanimous 9-0, he's not immune argument. Mm. The Colorado case, the judgment of the court is that Colorado can't take him off the ballot for the primaries.
Because it's got to be, can't be done at that level, can only be done at
it can't be done
level.
By the states, they say.
Yeah.
So this ruling has come down just the day before Super Tuesday, when lots of states, including Colorado, have their primaries, so kind of timely.
Weirdly.
Yeah. And it does essentially say that it can't be done at the state level, it would have to be done at the federal level. The majority ruling is that it can only be decided by Congress. Congress are the only people who can make that decision to say whether someone should be on or off the ballot.
Whether someone is an insurrectionist.
Well, no, they didn't actually... They didn't look into whether he engaged in insurrection at all. They didn't discuss it at all. They left that completely. And they didn't talk about whether if you are an insurrectionist, you can be removed by anyone. Mm-hmm. They said essentially that it is not self-executing. Congress has to decide.
Only that removal can be done at that level. Yeah.
The three liberal justices and Amy Coney Barrett wrote a concurrence to that, but dissenting from the methodology of the judgment. They agreed with the judgment that it can't be done at the state level, but they don't think that it should be only Congress. There are other federal authorities that could make that ruling.
Yeah.
Like the Supreme Court, like federal courts could make that ruling. But the majority ruling has been that it has to be Congress. So that means that Illinois, who recently also decided to take him off the primary ballot, Maine and Colorado won't be able to do that. It means that Arizona's weird decision recently, last week, to propose a bill, or pass a bill, in fact, that made it impossible to take a presidential candidate off the ballot due to the 14th Amendment, which kind of repealed the 14th Amendment in Arizona.
Yeah.
Is moot anyway, because it's not, because this is dealt with by the Supreme Court now. That's, so that isn't a thing that we, that Democrats can do. They're not going to be able to keep Trump off ballots in any jurisdictions at all, because Congress aren't going to rule that he's not allowed to be on the ballot. They argued essentially that if it was allowed, it would be chaos and it would create some kind of patchwork system of weird rulings.
Which
is a great argument for not having the Electoral College at all.
And also, of course, the having Congress decide that wouldn't create a patchwork of democracy. If party, the controlling party whose president was the one that was up for being judged as to whether he was an insurrectionist or not.
There is that.
Would then just go, because AKA the Supreme Court. If we, the supporters of the insurrectioning party, we've got the majority because we've just committed an insurrection and killed all the opposition, only we get to decide whether he has breached the 14th Amendment?
In
breaching the 14th Amendment and being the populist Congress, we can vote him in. We can give him a free pass.
Yeah. I mean, they're all about states' rights when it comes to abortions. And it says, and the Constitution puts the business of elections into the states. It says states have their own ability to run elections, how they see fit, essentially.
Yeah.
And yet the Supreme Court is saying, yeah, but not like this.
No, not if it means our guy. Not if it's, No, not if it's our guy.
Again, to be fair, it's not just the Republicans. You know, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson agreed that it shouldn't be left down to the states, this this argument. They didn't go as far as the others in the majority, but they also agreed that this was a matter that should not be decided by states because it gives the states too much power in a federal election, which I can't really understand because it does seem like states have a lot of power in federal elections already.
Yeah, the Electoral College.
Yeah, but
hello.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, we also have in Trump's legal cases in Georgia the hearing about Fonnie Willis and Nathan Wade and whether they were a couple before she hired him to be special prosecutor in this case.
Yeah.
It's now finished, but they had what MAGA people described as their star witness, Terrence Bradley, who was the one who arguably kicked the whole thing off when he talked to someone previously about the fact, about his interpretation that Willis and Wade had started their relationship much earlier than they claimed. And so they thought, well, this guy, you know, he's going to blow this case out of the water. He's going to come and say, yes, they definitely, here is how I know, they definitely were at it before. And in fact, when he got into the courtroom and they said, tell us how you knew about this, he was like, I don't have it. I don't know. I was just kind of shooting the shit with people. I was speculating.
No!
I was guessing at something I wondered about. I didn't have any information. I don't have any information, and I'm not prepared to say that they definitely were in a relationship. And that completely fucked them.
Because he's kind of, just opening your mouth like that will set massive things in motion. And then when you're called to, show us your evidence, then put your money where your mouth is.
I don't know.
He hasn't got anything.
So that wasn't great for their side.
It reminds me of, there was a conversation I was listening to on James O'Brien on LBC talk radio here in the UK. So it was a Conservative councillor rang up the show to talk about the kind of rise of Islamism. We can't talk about all Islam. He was complaining that we can't talk about. We talk about anti-Semitism,
locked up
but
for
we
saying
can't
Islam.
Talk about. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And then he said, and you should learn, you don't go up against James O'Brien, who will listen to everything you say and then ask you questions. He said, okay, show me, tell me who in the Labour Party is doing things equally anti-Semitic as Lee Anderson and Priti Patel are anti-Islamist. Show me stuff that's just as strong as that. Give me an example of that. So this guy just reeled off a name of a Labour MP.
Right.
James O'Brien said, OK, you are aware of the libel laws. What's your evidence? And instead of coming up with the evidence, because he had no evidence, he you know, did the same thing in the Funny Willis the thing. It's just shooting the shit to go, oh, yeah, well, it's obvious. Lots of people have said, oh, there are all sorts of things. And James O'Brien's saying, OK, well, what's your evidence then? Because you've now just libeled an MP live on the radio. Unless you provide the evidence, they're going to take issue at that. And he just complained about the fact that you can't say Islam is now being locked up these days. And then accused James O'Brien of being, well, he didn't quite call him anti-Semitic. He called him sort of unconcerned with the plight of. And again, he just said, well, where's your evidence of that? and it just turned out that the evidence of that was that this guy was getting frustrated at the straight questions he was being asked.
Yeah, that happens a lot on James O'Brien's show.
Yeah,
it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And consequently, the MP has now tweeted, I've heard that this, I will be consulting my lawyer. So the whole thing has kicked off. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a special kind of confidence that comes from phoning up James O'Brien, thinking you can win an argument with him.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Well, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, special kind of confidence that we also call stupidity, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like the whole of the case that they're thinking, right, yeah, we've got Fanny Willis and that's it, and we're going to be able to dismiss this entire case because she's clearly unsuited, because she was biased from the beginning, blah, 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 you know, her whole integrity is being compromised. Yeah, let's get the guy that set the ball rolling to tell us what he's got.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like Giuliani saying, oh, yeah, well, there's so much evidence I can show you of the, of that. I mean,
what is it?
Right, show us the evidence.
I don't actually have any evidence.
I've got that.
No, I mean, I think the thing is, the one piece of evidence that really takes the legs away from their case is they're arguing that she somehow enriched herself by giving her boyfriend this job and then benefiting financially.
Yeah.
And he was making more in private practice before he took this case. He's making less now.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the end of the case, as far as I'm concerned. She would be better off if she was in a relationship with him, not giving him this job and letting him continue in his very successful private practice as a lawyer.
Yeah.
And then benefiting from that money. So, yeah. Anyway, the judge, Scott McAfee, is going to rule within 2 weeks on this, whether he's going to remove Funny Willis from the
case. Once he stopped laughing.
I'd be so surprised if she gets taken out. I don't think she will. But, you know, we'll see. You never know. The law is an ass in many ways, but I'd be surprised.
Yeah, because there's no grounds for doing so, surely.
No, there's not. No, no, no.
And we're not lawyers, and we know that. It's clear.
In the end, basically, all they were able to argue is, if you, in the course of this, have found them not to be credible, then you must remove them from the case, basically.
Yeah.
So we also have the ruling in New York, where Trump, having been required to post his $454 million bond, because it's the judgment plus interest, he went, I don't have that amount of money. Would you take $100 million? That was basically what they did. They were like, if you need me to pay all of it, I'm going to have to sell a building, and that's just not fair. So I'll give you $100 and we'll call it quits.
And then
let me appeal. And weirdly, the New York court went, no.
Don't want to do that.
No, you have to pay the full amount if you want to appeal.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
See,
he has until March 25th to pay that.
Right.
And we'll see what happens with that.
And has he got, and is he still able to do business in New York to be able to create that?
What they've done is they've lifted the restriction on getting loans from banks. Because basically, because most big banks have either headquarters or some connection to New York.
Right.
The rule previously would have prevented him from doing business with businesses in New York, essentially.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it would have prevented him from getting a loan from a bank. that had a headquarters in New York. So they've lifted that restriction. So theoretically, if there was a bank that was prepared to loan him hundreds of millions of dollars based on his credit history.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Knowing how good he is to repay those kind of loans. Yeah.
I think they lifted that restriction as a joke.
Yeah.
Because I don't think
where
any.
You go?
Any
of
Go on. That's have a go. If you can convince one of them to do it, go for it.
Yeah. And your belief in the free market will police itself. Yeah. Well, yeah, here it is. Go test that. Yes.
Yeah. So if he can get a basically $350 million loan plus his $100 million he's got on hand, then he can post his bond. And that's not to mention the $83 million that he's got to post in the Eugene Carroll case. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And is he complaining yet that he hasn't got that much money?
He's complaining. Yeah, he's complaining. Unfair. He's complaining that it will cause him to have to sell property in under exigent circumstances.
Right.
Those being.
So he's actually got to sell it for what it's worth.
The property isn't worth what.
Yeah.
Yeah. The property wasn't worth what he claimed.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really? Is it? Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. And you're complaining about that? Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, take it up with the lawyer. Oh, no. That's why you're paying this ruling.
Yeah. And finally, in Florida, Eileen Cannon has ruled against Trump in a couple of ways. In as much as, first of all, she ruled that his co-defendants, Walt Nauter and Carlos de Oliveira, could not have access to classified discovery information, which seems fair,
right?
Given that they don't have any top secret clearance of any kind.
Yeah, like Trump doesn't anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And now she has ruled that Trump's lawyers bid to see more of the classified documents that the prosecutors submitted.
Right.
The government is right to withhold some information. That isn't hampering Trump's case. It's because it's classified stuff and they haven't got the rights to see it. So, you know, if there's all kinds of rules under the Classified Information Procedures Act that mean that information can then be used in open court, essentially, under various methods. There's ways of kind of describing it, of changing details, which takes away the secrets in there, and of you know, there's a set of procedures that she will have to learn because she knows fuck all about it. But she is gradually picking up things about how they will actually use those classified documents in court. But one of the things they're not doing is just giving them to Trump, who has not had a great history of handling classified documents.
Well, he's had a great time, Matt.
He's got plenty of experience.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't want to ask him about whether that's a thing that you're allowed to do or not.
No.
Yeah. Because it will change depending on how it suits him. Yeah. And then the other stop press is Mitch McConnell was standing down prior to the election.
Well, in November. Right? Yeah. He said he's standing down as leader of the Republicans in the Senate. He is not standing down as senator. He'll still be a senator. So there's not going to be an election or anything for him for his seat. But yeah, there will be a leadership election. So
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
So
given how well the ones in the House have gone.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And is there time to have that many elections before the election? So do you think he's standing down because his job is done? He's, you know, manipulated the Republican Party into revoking Roe v. Wade, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff. There's those theories that he's just been there playing the long game to get the right to be as right as he wanted it to be.
If I had to speculate, I would say that it's got to be a health thing, I would think.
Right.
I mean, because he's had a few health issues.
Yeah.
And perhaps it's got to a point where he has been advised that he won't be able to keep going forever, which obviously everyone knew before. And and he's like, all right, just 6 more months.
How old is he?
Pretty old.
Well, he looks at it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's 82.
Yeah.
There you go. So he's older than Biden.
Yeah, he's older than Martin Scorsese. Yeah.
but nobody says in the Republican Party, that's Scorsese. He ought not to be
making films anymore.
But they do say it about Biden. But they don't weirdly say it about Mitch McConnell.
No. There's not a lot on the Republican side about how McConnell shouldn't be leader because he clearly is too old. for that kind of job. No.
No. No. Very, very odd. Yeah. He's losing his marbles and has no chin. Never has had. Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Trump legal advisor Ken Cheesebro is back in the news.
Yay!
As it turns out, he might not have been totally truthful in his cooperation session with Michigan investigators looking into his fake elector scheme that he helped devise. Here they are asking him about his social media.
Do you have any social media presence? Facebook, Instagram,
no,
Twitter?
No,
alternate IDs that you're using for that kind of stuff?
No, I mean, I don't do any tweeting.
And while he seemed totally convincing to me, it turns out that wasn't true. In fact, he had an account called Badger Pundit, where he also talked about election stuff. His lawyer, Robert Lankford, dismissed this as unrelated to his work on Trump's campaign, saying when he was doing volunteer work for the campaign, he was very specific and hunkered down into being the lawyer that he is and gave specific kinds of legal advice based on things that he thought were legitimate legal challenges versus Badger Pundit, who is this other guy over there just being a goof. Yeah, my client wasn't withholding evidence. He was just being a goof, Your Honour.
Just being over there.
That usually works.
Yeah.
That other guy, who also happens to be Cheesebro, was just doing goofy stuff like tweeting more than 50 times that Pence had the power to count the fake electors. But hey, just because he lied about that doesn't mean he lied about other stuff, like the fact that he only learned in May 2021 that the Trump team had been planning on using the fake electors since before the election, regardless of how their legal cases went. Cheesebro may not have known, but that goof Badger Pundit sure did, tweeting about it in September 2020 when it was discussed in an Atlantic article. Honestly, if you can't trust a Trump lawyer to tell the truth, who can you trust?
God, that's right. It's not like people in the Tory party, chaps, have lots of different Michael Green IDs.
No.
No. In the same way that British physician Andrew Wakefield lost his medical license in Britain as a result of publishing a fraudulent and long debunked report in 1998 linking MMR vaccines to autism, let's hope Joseph Ladapo gets struck off for failing to point out the problems associated with not getting vaccinated against the latest measles outbreak in Florida. Sure, COVID anti-vaxxer Ron DeSantis installed Florida Surgeon General Ladapo advised parents in a letter to be on the lookout for a rash that often develops on the face and neck before spreading to the rest of the body, as well as high fever, which can reach 105 degrees, a cough, runny nose and red watery eyes, and added, due to the high immunity rate in the community, as well as the burden on families and educational costs of healthy children missing school, his agency would let parents or guardians make their own decisions about sending their kids to school. It left out a recommendation that parents of non-immunised children get them vaccinated immediately, and left out the information that actual epidemiologists like Caitlin Chatalina know, that among the unimmunised, 9 out of 10 people exposed will get infected, and 1 in 5 will be hospitalised. 1 in 20 will develop pneumonia, the most common way measles kill young kids. 1 in 1,000 will develop encephalitis, an infection of the brain, sometimes causing permanent brain damage, and 1 to 3 in 1,000 will die. Also, measles can cause immune amnesia, where the immune system loses its ability to fight other viruses that people were previously immune to. Yeah, you see, it's something that's sufficiently dangerous to life that, hey, a vaccine was invented in 1963 to prevent it spreading. But if you're more concerned about votes than the lives of the actual voters or their children, yeah, sure, appoint a super quack to Surgeon General post and ignore the fact that Florida has a third of all the cases currently in the US and that the number of cases so far this year is more than half of the entirety of cases last year already, and there were only 70 cases last year. The rate has dropped so low because of the effectiveness of a life-saving vaccination program based on a vaccine that has worked successfully for 60 years that the severity of the disease for the unimmunized can be deadly. I do hope DeSantis and Ladapo have fallen behind on their own shots. And no, they can't have a lollipop.
Last time we reported on the, at the time, brand new ruling by the Alabama Supreme Court that embryos are people, my friend. And since then, the Republican Party realised that while this is great for their campaign to force poor people to have babies, it also accidentally poses a problem for IVF, because there are all kinds of other rules about not storing people in liquid nitrogen and then throwing them away when you don't need them anymore. That led several Alabama IVF clinics to stop providing the treatment, which is a problem for Republicans because that affects rich people too. In fact, more than 2% of the babies born in the US are conceived using IVF and similar technologies, and it's cool with basically everyone except the most ultra-conservative insane Christians like Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who, while he now claims to support IVF, has repeatedly claimed in hearings that life begins at fertilisation and a fetus is a unique and separate human being. The Alabama legislature has clumsily tried to account for IVF, proposing a new bill which says, "No action, suit or criminal prosecution shall be brought or maintained against any individual or entity providing goods or services related to in vitro fertilisation, except for an act or omission that is both intentional and not arising from or related to IVF services." Which seems to me like it also explicitly provides immunity to the fertility clinic the Supreme Court ruled are liable in this case. I'm no expert on Alabama law, but I don't know if the state legislature can follow up a state Supreme Court ruling with, but not really, though. Democrats in the Senate tried to pass a bill protecting IVF at the federal level, but that was blocked by Republican Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith on the made-up grounds that it would somehow pave the way for human-animal hybrids.
What?
I don't know. The only sliver of light that comes from this is that the more Republicans fuck around with people's ability to make their own reproductive health decisions, the more they'll find out in November that people don't like it when they do that. But that is cold comfort for all the millions of people affected by their callousness in the meantime.
Among the laugh-a-minute moments at this year's Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, were A, our own didn't last as long as a lettuce, ex-Prime Minister Liz Truss, who blamed the deep state and, bizarrely, Joe Biden for her downfall and the trashing of the economy rather than her own insanely low IQ and being the puppet of the far-right ERG group. Two, a January 6th-themed pinball machine with graphics on the high-score targets, including Stop the Steal, fake news and political prisoners. And when certain scores are hit, clips from the insurrection are played, as well as audio clips from insurrectionist-in-chief Mr. Trump. Despite it appearing very popular, GOP members were accused of destroying the conservative movement, but probably because they just didn't respect the, hey, my dime was on the table next rule. Also given space were C, out and proud actual Nazis who openly identifies as National Socialists, mingling with mainstream conservative personalities at Young Republicans Mixer, including some from Turning Point USA, and discussing race science and anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Ryan Sanchez, who's previously part of the Nazi Rise Above movement, took photos and videos of himself at the conference with an official badge, and touted associations with previously ejected from CPAC well-known Nazi and white supremacist Nick Fuentes. In another video, Sanchez can be seen in the lobby of the conference hotel giving a Nazi salute. After NBC News reported on these events in an article, CPAC issued multiple statements on X, calling the article a hit piece, false and fake news, and saying CPAC stands firmly against all forms of anti-Semitism and hate. Well, I guess when you're so far over one side of the political spectrum, there's no one else but themselves to cover up for themselves. So just who else are they lying to? Musk? Truss? Trump? Because we all see you, you losers.
The House Oversight Committee finally got to question Hunter Biden behind closed doors so that nobody could see their failure on video. But one of the conditions they agreed to in order to make it happen was releasing a full transcript. It hardly needs saying that nothing in the transcript offers any new or existing evidence of any corruption or other naughty things on the part of old Joe. But it does give us the opportunity to witness the fantastic trolling done by Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell when it was his turn to question Hunter, which we present to you now as a dramatic reading. Any time your father was in government prior to the presidency or before, did he ever operate a hotel?
No, he has never operated a hotel.
So he's never operated a hotel where foreign nationals spent millions at that hotel while he was in office?
No, he has not.
Did your father ever employ in the Oval Office any direct family member to also work in the Oval Office?
My father has never employed any direct family members, to my knowledge.
While your father was president, did anyone in the family receive 41 trademarks from China?
No.
As president and leader of the party, has your father ever tried to install as the chairperson of the party a daughter-in-law or anyone else in the family?
No. And I don't think that anyone in my family would be crazy enough to want to be chairperson of the DNC.
Has your father ever in his time as an adult been fined $355 million by any state that he worked in?
No, he has not, thank God.
Anyone in your family ever strike a multi-billion dollar deal with the Saudi government while your father was in office?
No.
That's all I've got.
That's just brilliant. Oh, yes. So good. At Fallacious Towers, we're in awe of the progress that AI image generators have made just over the last year, and we've even been in receipt of requests to buy the Funko Pop versions of ourselves that we've generated, so we know the power of an image. BBC's Panorama programme discovered dozens of AI-generated fake images of black voters that Donald Trump supporters have been creating and sharing to encourage African-Americans to vote Republican. Mark Kay and his team at a conservative radio show in Florida used AI to create an image of Mr. Trump smiling with his arms around a group of black women at a party and shared it on Facebook, where Mr. Kay has more than 1 million followers. At first, it looks real, but on closer inspection, everyone's skin's a little bit shiny and there are missing fingers on people's hands, some of those telltale signs of AI-created images. I'm not a photojournalist, Mr. Kay tells Panorama from his radio studio. I'm not out there taking pictures of what's really happening. I'm a storyteller. I'm not claiming it as accurate. I'm not saying, hey, look, Donald Trump was at this party with all of these African-American voters. Look how much they love him. If anyone's voting one way or another because of one photo they see on a Facebook page, well, that's the problem with that person, not with the post itself. Which, of course, is the clarion cry of deniability that every agitprop exponent has used since Reductio ad Goebbels. Cliff Albright, the co-founder of campaign group Black Voters Matter, said the fake images were consistent with a very strategic narrative pushed by conservatives, from the Trump campaign down to influencers online, designed to win over black voters. They are particularly targeting young black men who are thought to be more open to voting for Mr. Trump than black women. Men like Douglas in Atlanta, who thought an AI-generated image of Trump sitting on a front porch with black voters was real. He said it bolstered his view, shared by some other black people he knew, that Trump is supportive of the community. When revealed to be fake, he added, well, that's the thing about social media. It's easy to fool people. Again, it's the printing press's fault, not the people creating the images. Huh? All of the major social media companies have policies in place to tackle potential influence operations, and several, like Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, have introduced new measures to deal with AI-generated content during elections. Musk and ex-Twitter, you think?
If I was New York Attorney General Letitia James, I might be tempted to have a nice sit down after winning a multi-billion dollar lawsuit against the corrupt former president. Maybe have a bit of cake and rewatch Ted Lasso. She's fucking earned it, in my opinion. But she is apparently not one to rest on her laurels, because there are always more villains in Gotham. Like, for example, former CEO of the National Rifle Association, Wayne LaPierre, who you'll be shocked to learn is not a great guy. Thanks to AG James holding him to account, a jury has now found him liable for corruption by diverting $5.4 million of the non-profit organisation's funds into his own pockets by expensing African safaris, 8 trips to the Bahamas, private jet flights and more, as well as awarding multi-million dollar contracts to vendors who showered him with gifts like international holidays and access to a 108-foot yacht. The downside is that he'll be paying that money back to the NRA, who also are not the greatest. But, to soften the blow, his 30-plus years of financial mismanagement put them so much in debt that they had to declare bankruptcy in 2021, so I don't think they're in a position to start throwing money at Republicans again just yet, especially since the AG has requested an independent monitor be assigned to oversee their spending. My question is, can we get Letitia James to look at Clarence Thomas next, please?
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, that's excellent that they're bankrupt. Oh, how marvellous. The time has now come for us all to stand together to combat the forces of division and beat this poison. We must face down the extremists who would tear us apart. There must be leadership, not pandering or appeasement when they tell their lies. No, not pleas from the left to rid the country of the worst government ever, who ruined the economic, health and education systems of an entire nation over the last 14 years. But little Rishi getting all Neville Chamberlain and promising peace in our time by all but instructing the police to start clamping down forcefully on people who disagree with his lame-ass policies over Gaza. So determinedly that they elected George Let Me Be Your Cat and Lick Milk From Your Cupped Hands ruler Lenska Galloway rather than the Tory candidate in Rochdale when the goal was left open by Labour's removal of their candidate. Similarly, way over there on the right, 30p Lee Anderson made not-so-veiled references to Sadiq Khan being in hock to Muslims so that it's they who run London now. You know, the kind of remark that if you said Zionists and not Muslims, Starmer would have withdrawn your candidacy almost immediately and permanently, cough, cough, member for Islington North. Lee Anderson eventually got the whip removed, not because he was an out-and-out anti-Islamist, and there's no place for that riddling the rotten core of the Tory party, but because he didn't apologise to Sadiq. Nick Ferrari on LBC ended up terminating his interview with Immigration Minister Michael Tomlinson because the minister could not say why Anderson should have apologised other than because the words he chose were wrong, and then failing on six occasions to say why the words were wrong. By this time, even Anderson had distanced himself from the extremism of his own words, but not the party, because the party found it useful to create the other, to blame, rather than accept responsibility for the carnage they've wrought on the country and will be wrought upon them come the general election. Quod est demonstrandum reductio ad adversum.
That's a deep British celebrity Big Brother cut that you had on George Galloway there.
Yeah. Well, he's turned up because they just announced that the likes of Sharon Osbourne were going to be on the new celebrity Big Brother. Yeah. And of course, Galloway's won. So the next bulleted item down is George Galloway. And it's there. Get on there. Get on, yeah, get on BBC.com, people. Look it up. It's appalling. He's an elected MP.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our straw man level patrons Will M, Scott, Aussie on Bank, Laura Thompson, Renee Zed, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED, we could just call her Amber, though another listener recognised her at QED last year because we keep using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons, Melissa Saitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much for your continued support. It's really very much appreciated. Thank you.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump, and you can join our Oscars pool at fallacioustrump.com/Oscars.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission, so until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right, go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.